Commit. Her voice cracks at the mention of shade. Next to me, Farley's breath quickens and her hand curls over her stomach. They asked if I wanted vengeance for his death. I did. So I swore my allegiance to their cause, and I was placed as a servant inside the royal residence at the Hall of the Sun. I came to the palace as a red spy, but even I did not know I was something else entirely. During the Rite of Queen's trial, I discovered I somehow possessed electrical ability. After consultation, the late King Tiberius and Queen Ilara decided to take me in, to quietly study what I was and, hopefully, teach me what my ability could become. They disguised me as a silver to protect me. They rightfully knew that a red with an ability would be considered a freak at best, an abomination at worst, and they hid my identity to keep me safe from the prejudices of both red and silver. My blood status was known to a few, Maven included, as well as Prince Tiberius. But the Scarlet Guard discovered what I was. They threatened to expose me publicly, both to ruin the credibility of the king and to put me in danger. I was forced to serve them as a spy, to follow their orders, and to facilitate their infiltration of the king's court. The next outcry from the room is louder, and not easily put down. "This is some impressive bullshit," Killorn growls. My ultimate mission was to gain silver allies for the Scarlet Guard. I was instructed to target Prince Tiberius, a cunning warrior and the heir to the throne of Norda. He was... She hesitates, her eyes boring into ours. They shift back and forth, searching. Out of the corner of my eye, I see Cal lower his head. He was easily convinced. Once I figured out how to convince him, I also aided the Scarlet Guard in their plans for the sun shooting, which left 11 dead, and the bombing of the Bridge of Archeon. When Prince Tiberius killed his father, King Maven acted swiftly, making the only choice he thought he could. Her voice warbles. Next to her, Maven does his best to look sad at the mention of his murdered father. He was grieving, and we were sentenced to execution in the arena. We escaped with our lives only because of the Scarlet Guard. They took us both to an island stronghold off the Norton coast. I was held prisoner there, as were Prince Tiberius and, I discovered, the brother I thought I'd lost. Like me, he had an ability, and like me, he was feared by the Scarlet Guard. They intended to kill us, the ones they call New Bloods. When I discovered that others like me existed, and the Scarlet Guard was hunting them down to exterminate them, I managed to escape with my brother and a few others. Prince Tiberius came with us. I know now that he intended to build himself an army to challenge his brother. After a few months, the Scarlet Guard caught up with us all, and they killed the few abilitied reds we were able to find. My brother was murdered in the conflict, but I escaped alone. For once, the heat in the room isn't coming from Cal. Everyone boils with rage. This isn't Mare. These aren't her words. But still, I feel anger as much as the rest. How can she even let this out of her mouth? I'd spit blood before speaking Maven's lies. But what choice does she have? With nowhere else to go, I turned myself into King Maven and whatever justice he saw to give me. Her resolve breaks piece by piece until tears course down her cheeks. I'm ashamed to say they help her little speech more than anything else. I stand here now, a willing prisoner. I am sorry for what I've done, but I am ready to do whatever I can to stop the Scarlet Guard and their terrifying hope for the future. They stand for no one but themselves and the people they can control. They kill everyone else, everyone who stands in their way, everyone who is different. The last words stick, refusing to come out. On the throne, Maven sits still, but his throat works a little, emitting a noise the camera cannot hear, urging her to finish as he demands. Mayor Barrow raises her chin and glares forward. Her eyes seem black with rage. We, the New Bloods, are not fit for their dawn. Shouts and protests erupt through the room, hurling obscenities at Maven, at the Mirandus Whisper, even at the Lightning Girl for speaking the words. Vile beast of a king! Would rather kill myself than say, barely a puppet! Traitor, plain and simple. Not her first time singing their song. Killorn is the first to break, both hands curling into fists. You think she wanted to do this? He says, his voice loud enough to carry, but not harsh. His face reddens with frustration, and Cal puts a hand on his shoulder, standing with him. Its silence is more than a few, particularly the younger officers. They look embarrassed, apologetic even, shamed by the reprimand of an 18-year-old boy. Quiet, all of you! The colonel rumbles, shutting up the rest. He turns once to glare with his mismatched eyes. The brat is still speaking. Colonel! Cal growls. His tone is a threat plain as day. In reply, the colonel points on screen at Maven, not Mayor. Offer refuge to any fleeing the terror of the Scarlet Guard, and to the new bloods among you, hiding from what seems to be little more than genocide, my own doors are open. I have instructed the royal palaces of Archeon, Harbor Bay, Delphi and Summerton, as well as the military forts of Norta, to protect your kind from slaughter. You will have food, shelter, and, if you wish it, training for your abilities. You are my subjects to protect, and I will do it with every resource I have to give. Mayor Barrow is not the first of you to join us, and she will not be the last. He has the smug audacity to lay a hand on her arm. So this is how barely more than a boy becomes a king. He's not only ruthless and remorseless, but just plain brilliant. If not for the rage curling in me, I would be impressed. His ploy will cause problems for the guard, of course. Personally, I'm more concerned with the new bloods still out there. We were recruited to Mare and her rebellion with little choice in the matter. Now there's even less. The guard or the king. Both see us as weapons. Both will get us killed. But only one will keep us in chains. I glance over my shoulder, seeking out Ada. Her eyes are glued to the screen, effortlessly memorizing every tick and inflection to be scrutinized later. Like me, she frowns, thinking about the deeper worry no member of the Scarlet Guard has yet. What will happen to the people like us? To the Scarlet Guard, I say only this, Maven adds, standing up from his throne. Your dawn is little more than darkness, and it will never take this country. We fight to the last. Strength and power. On the dais and across the rest of the throne room, the chant echoes from every mouth, including Mayor's. Strength and power. The image holds for a second, burning the sight into every brain. Red and silver, the Lightning Girl and King Maven, united against the great evil they've made us out to be. I know it isn't Mare's choice, but it is her fault. Didn't she realize he would use her if he didn't kill her? She didn't think he would do it. Cal said that before, about her interrogation. They are both weak where Maven is concerned, and that weakness continues to plague us all. Back at the Notch, Mare did her best to school me in my ability. I practice here when I can, together with the other New Bloods learning their limits. Cal and Julie and Jacos attempt to help, but I and many others are loath to trust their tutelage. Besides, I've found someone else to help me. I know my ability has grown in strength, if not control. I feel it now, prodding beneath my skin, a blissful emptiness to still the chaos around me. It begs, and I clench a fist against it, keeping the silence back. I can't turn my anger on the people in this room. They aren't the enemy. When the screen cuts to black, signaling the end of the address, a dozen voices sound at once. Cal's palm slams against the desk in front of him, and he turns, muttering to himself. "I've seen enough," I think he says before he pushes his way out of the room. Stupid. He knows his own brother. He can dissect Maven's words better than any of us. The Colonel knows it too. "Get him back here," he says under his breath, leaning in to speak to Julian. The Silver nods, moving smoothly to retrieve his nephew. Many stop talking to watch him go. "Captain Farley, your thoughts?" the Colonel says, his sharp voice drawing attention back where it belongs. He crosses his arms and turns to face his daughter. Farley snaps to focus, seemingly unaffected by the speech. She swallows a bite of potato. "The natural response would be a broadcast of our own, refuting Maven's claims, showing the country who we saved. Using us as propaganda, doing exactly what Maven is doing to Mare." My stomach tightens at the thought of being shoved in front of a camera, forced to sing the praises of the people I barely tolerate and cannot fully trust. Her father nods.
"I agree.
But I don't think that's the right course of action." The Colonel raises the brow of his ruined eye. She takes it as an invitation to continue.
"It'll just be words. Nothing of use in the end, in the scheme of what's going on."
Her fingers tap against her lips, and I can almost see the wheels turning in her head.
"I think we keep Maven talking, while we keep on doing. Already our infiltration of Corvium is placing strain on the King. See how he singled out the city, its military? He's bolstering morale. Why do that if they don't need it?"
At the back of the room, Julian returns, one hand on Cal's shoulder. They're of the same height, though Cal looks about 50 pounds heavier than his uncle. Koros prison certainly took as much of a toll on Julian as it did the rest of us.
"We have a good deal of information regarding Corvium," Farley adds, "and its importance to Norton military, not to mention Silver morale, makes it the perfect place."
"For what?" I hear myself ask, surprising everyone in the room, myself included. Farley is good enough to address me directly. "The first assault. The Scarlet Guard's official declaration of war against the King of Norda." A strangled sort of yelp erupts from Cal, not the kind anyone would expect from a prince and soldier. His face pales, eyes wide with what can only be fear.
"Corvium is a fortress. a city built with the sole purpose of surviving a war. There are 1,000 silver officers in there, soldiers trained to organize, to fight Lakelanders, to stand behind a trench and mark places on a map. Farley fires back. Tell me I'm wrong, Cal. Tell me your kind is prepared to fight inside its own walls. The glare he levels at her would cut through anyone else, but Farley stands firm. If anything, she strengthens in her opposition. It's suicide for you and for anyone in your way, he tells her. She laughs at the blatant dodge, inciting him further. He controls himself well, a fire prince reluctant to burn. I'm not part of this, he snarls. Good luck assaulting Corvium without whatever intelligence you counted on from me. Farley's emotions are not so hindered by a silver ability. The room will not burn with her, no matter how red her face flushes. Thanks to Shade Barrow, I already have everything I need. The name usually has a sobering effect. To remember Shade is to remember how he died and what it did to the people he loved. For Mayor, it turned her cold, empty, into the person willing to trade herself to keep her friends and family from the same fate. For Farley, it left her alone, singular in her pursuits, focused only on the Scarlet Guard and nothing else. I didn't know either of them for very long before Shade died, but even I lament who they were. The loss changed them both, and not for the better. She forces herself through the pain Shade's memory brings, if only to shove Cal's nose in it. Before we faked his execution, Shade was our key operative in Corvium. He used his ability to feed us as much information as he could give. Don't think for one second you are our only card to play in this, Farley says evenly. Then she turns back to the colonel. I advise a full assault, utilizing new bloods in conjunction with red soldiers and our infiltrators already inside the city. Utilizing new bloods. The words sting, stab, and burn, leaving a bitter taste in my mouth. I guess it's my turn to storm from the room. Cal watches me go, mouth pressed into a grim, firm line. You're not the only one who can be dramatic, I think, as I leave him behind.
8. Mayor. I make it easy for the Arvins to remove me from the dais. Egg and Trio take my arms, leaving Kitten and Clover behind. My body goes numb as they escort me out of sight. What have I done? I wonder. What will this do? Somewhere the others watched. Cal, Killorn, Farley, my family. They saw that. The shame almost makes me vomit all over my wretched, magnificent gown. I feel worse than when I read the measures of Maven's father, dooming so many to conscription in payment for the Scarlet Guard's action. But then, everyone knew the measures were not my doing. I was only the messenger. The Arvins pushed me forward, not back the way I came, but behind the throne, through a doorway, to rooms I've never seen. The first is clearly another council chamber, with a long table topped in marble, surrounded by more than a dozen plush chairs. One seat is stonework, a cold construction of gray, for Maven. The room is brightly lit, flooded by the setting sun on one side. The windows face west, away from the river, looking over the palace walls and the gently sloping hills, covered in snowy forest. Last year, Killorn and I cut river ice for spare coins, risking frostbite in favor of honest work. That lasted about a week, until I realized coppers were breaking up ice that would only refreeze was a poor use of our time. How strange, to know that was only a year ago and a lifetime away. Your pardon, a soft voice says, sounding from the only seat in shadow. I turn to it and watch John unfold himself from his chair, a book in one hand. The Seer. His red eyes glow with some inner light I can't name. I thought he was an ally, a new blood with an ability as strange as mine. He is more powerful than an eye, able to see farther into the future than any silver can. Now he stands before me as an enemy, having betrayed us to Maven. His stare feels like hot needles pricking skin. He is the reason I led my friends to Koros prison, and the reason my brother is dead. The sight of him chases the icy numbness away, replacing all that emptiness with livid, electric heat. I want nothing more than to beat him across the face with whatever I can. I settle for snarling at him. Good to see Maven doesn't keep all his pets on a leash. John just blinks at me. Good to see you are not so blind as you once were. He replies as I pass him. When we first met him, Cal warned us that people go mad puzzling out riddles of the future. He was absolutely right, and I won't fall into that trap again. I turn away, resisting the urge to dissect his carefully chosen words.
Ignore me all you want, Miss Barrow. I'm not your concern, he adds. Only one person here is.
I glance over my shoulder, my muscles moving before my brain can react. Of course John speaks before I do, stealing the words from my throat.
No, Mare, I don't mean yourself.
We leave him behind, continuing on to wherever I am being led. The silence is a torture as much as John, giving me nothing to focus on except his words. He means Maven, I realize, and it's not difficult to guess the implication and the warning. There are pieces of me, small pieces, still in love with a fiction, a ghost inside a living boy I cannot begin to fathom. The ghost who sat by my bed while I dreamed in pain. The ghost who kept Samson from my mind as long as he could, I know, delaying an inevitable torture. The ghost who loves me, in what poisoned way he can. And I feel that poison working in me. As I suspect, the Arvins don't take me back to my prison of a bedroom. I try to memorize our path, noting doors and passages branching off the many council chambers and salons in this wing of the palace. The royal apartments, every inch more decorated than the last. But I'm more interested in the colors dominating the rooms rather than the furniture itself. Red, black, and royal silver. That's easy to understand. The colors of reigning House Kalor. There's navy as well. The shade gives me a sick feeling in my stomach. It stands for Ilara. Dead, but still here. We finally stop in a small but well-stocked library. Sunset angles through the heavy curtains, drawn against the light. Dust motes dance in the red beams. Ash above a dying fire. I feel like I am inside a heart, surrounded by bloody red. This is Maven's study, I realize. I fight the urge to take the leather seat behind a lacquered desk, to claim something of his as my own. It might make me feel better, but only for a moment. Instead, I observe what I can, looking around with wide, absorbing eyes. Scarlet tapestries worked with black and glinting silver thread hang between portraits and photographs of Kalor ancestors. House Mirandus is not so evident here, represented only by a flag of blue and white hanging from the vaulted ceiling. The colors of other queens are there, too, some bright, some faded, some forgotten, except for the golden yellow of House Jakos. It isn't there at all. Corianne, Cal's mother, has been erased from this place. I search the pictures quickly, though I don't really know what I'm searching for. None of the faces look familiar, except for Maven's father. His painting, larger than the rest, glowering over the empty fireplace, is difficult to ignore. Still draped in black, a sign of mourning. He's been dead only a few months. I see Cal in his face, and Maven, too. The same straight nose, high cheekbones, and thick, glossy black hair. Family traits, judging by the other pictures of Kalor kings. The one labeled Tiberius V is particularly good-looking, almost startlingly so. But then, painters are not paid to make their subjects look ugly. I'm not surprised to see Cal isn't represented. Like his mother, he has been removed. A few spaces are conspicuously empty, and I suppose he used to occupy them. Why wouldn't he? Cal was his father's firstborn, his favorite son. It's no wonder Maven took down his brother's pictures. No doubt he burned them. How's the head? I ask Egg, offering a sly, empty smile. He responds with a glare, and my smile spreads. I'll treasure the memory of him flat on his back, electrocuted into unconsciousness. No more shakes? I press on, fluttering a hand the way his body flopped. Again, no response, but his neck colors blue-gray in an angry flush. That's entertainment enough for me. Damn, those skin healers are good. Having fun? Maven enters alone, his presence oddly small in comparison to the figure he cuts on the throne. His sentinels must be close, though, just outside the study. He's not foolish enough to go anywhere without them. With one hand he gestures, sweeping the Arvins from the room. They go swiftly, quiet as mice. I don't have much else for amusement, I say when they disappear. For the thousandth time today, I curse the presence of the manacles. Without them, Maven would be as dead as his mother. Instead, they force me to tolerate him in all his disgusting glory. He grins at me, enjoying the dark joke. Good to see not even I can change you. To that I have no response at all. I can't count the ways Maven has changed me and destroyed the girl I used to be. As I suspected, he flounces to the desk and sits with a cool, practiced grace. I must apologize for my rudeness, Mare. I think my eyes bug out of my head because he laughs. Your birthday was more than a month ago, and I didn't get you anything. As with the Arvins, he gestures, motioning for me to take a seat in front of him. Surprised, shaken, still numb from my little performance, I do as he commands. Trust me, I mutter. I'm fine without whatever new horror you plan to give to me. His smile widens. You'll like this, I promise. Somehow I don't believe that. Grinning, he reaches into a drawer of his desk. Without ceremony, he tosses me a scrap of silk. Black, one half of it embroidered with red and gold flowers. I snatch it up greedily. Geese's handiwork. I run it between my fingers. It still feels smooth and cool, though I expect something slimy, corrupted, poisoned by Maven's possession. But every twist of thread is a piece of her, perfect in its fierce beauty, flawless, a reminder of my sister and our family. He watches me turn the silk over and over. We took it off you when we first apprehended you, while you were unconscious. Unconscious. Imprisoned in my own body, tortured by the weight of the sounder. Thank you, I force out stiffly, as if I have any reason to thank him for anything. And? I offer you one question. I blink at him, confused. You may ask one question, and I will answer it truthfully. For a second I don't believe him. I'm a man of my word when I want to be. He said that once, and stands by it. It really is a gift, if he holds to his promise. The first question rises without thought. Are they alive? Did you really leave them there and let them get away? It almost slips past my lips before I think better of wasting my question. Of course they got away. If Cal were dead, I would know it. Maven would still be gloating, or someone would have said something. And he is far too concerned with the Scarlet Guard. If the others had been captured after me, he would know more and fear less. Maven tips his head, watching me think as a cat watches a mouse. He's enjoying this. It makes my skin crawl. Why give me this? Why even let me ask? Another question almost wasted. Because I know the answer to this, too. Maven is not who I thought he was, but that doesn't mean I don't know parts of him. I can guess what this is. As much as I want to be wrong, It's his version of an explanation, a way to make me understand what he's done and why he continues to do it. He knows what question I will eventually summon the courage to ask. He is a king, but a boy, too, alone in a world of his own making. How much of it was her? He doesn't flinch. He knows me too well to be surprised. A more foolish girl would dare to hope, would believe him a puppet to an evil woman, now abandoned, now adrift, continuing on a course he has no idea how to change. Luckily, I'm not that stupid. I was slow to walk, you know. He isn't looking at me anymore, but at the blue flag above us, adorned in white pearls and cloudy gems, a rich thing doomed to collect dust in Alara's memory. The doctors, even Father, they told Mother I would be fine in my own time. It would happen one day, but one day wasn't fast enough for her. She couldn't be the queen with the crippled, slow son. Not after Corianne gave the kingdom a prince like Cal, always smiling and talking and laughing and perfect. She had my nurse discarded, blamed her for my shortcomings, and took it upon herself to make me stand. I don't remember it, but she told me the story so many times. She thought it showed how much she loved me. Dread pulls in my stomach, though I don't understand why. Something warns me to get up, to walk from this room and into the waiting arms of my guards. Another lie, another lie, I tell myself, artfully woven, as only he can do. Maven cannot look at me. I taste shame on the air. His perfect eyes, made of ice, gloss over, but I've long hardened myself to his tears. The first gets stuck in his dark lashes, a wobbling drop of crystal. I was a baby, and she hammered her way into my head. She made my body stand and walk and fall. She did it every day, until I cried when she entered a room, until I learned to do it myself, out of fear. But that would not do either. A baby crying whenever his mother held him? He shakes his head. Eventually she took the fear away, too. His eyes darken. Like so many other things. You ask how much of it was me? He whispers. Some. Enough. But not all. I can't stand this any longer. With unbalanced motions tipped by the weight of my manacles and the sick clenching of my heart, I clamber from the chair. You can't still blame this on her, Maven. I hiss at him, stepping back. Don't lie to me and say you're doing this because of a dead woman. As fast as his tears came, they disappear, wiped away as if they never existed. The crack in his mask seals shut. Good. I have no desire to see the boy beneath. I'm not, he says slowly, sharply. She is gone now. My choices are my own. Of that I am infinitely sure. The throne, his seat in the council chamber, plain things compared to the diamond glass artistry or velvet his father used to sit. Hewn of blocked stone, simple, without gems or precious metal. And now I understand why. Silent stone, you make all your decisions sitting there. Wouldn't you, with House Mirandus leering so close? He leans back, propping his chin on one hand. I've had enough of the whispers they call guidance, enough to last a lifetime. Good, I spit at him. Now you have no one else to blame for your evil. One side of his mouth lifts in a weak, patronizing smile. You'd think that. I fight the urge to seize whatever I can and bash his head in with it, erasing his smile from the face of the earth. If only I could kill you and be done with this. How you wound me. He clucks his tongue, amused. And then what? Run back to your Scarlet Guard? To my brother? Samson saw him many times in your thoughts. Dreams. Memories. Still fixated on Cal even now, when you've won. It's an easy card to play. His grins annoy me, but my smirk vexes him just as much. We know how to needle each other. Strange, then, that you're trying so hard to be like him. It's Maven's turn to stand, his hands landing hard on the desk as he rises up to meet my eye. A corner of his mouth twitches, pulling his face into a bitter sneer. I'm doing what my brother never could. Cal follows orders, but he can't make choices. You know that as well as I do. His eyes flicker, finding an empty spot on the wall, looking for Cal's face. No matter how wonderful you might think he is, so gallant, brave, and perfect, he would make a worse king than I ever could. I almost agree. I've spent too many months watching Cal walk the line between Scarlet Guard and Silver Prince, refusing to kill but refusing to stop us, never leaning to one side or the other. Even though he's seen horror and injustice, he still won't take a stand. But he is not Maven. He is not one inch the evil that Maven is. I've only heard one person describe him as perfect. You. I tell him calmly. It only maddens him further. I think you may have a bit of an obsession where Cal is concerned. Are you going to blame that on your mother, too? It was meant to be a joke, but to Maven it is anything but. His gaze wavers, only for an instant, a shocking one. In spite of myself, I feel my eyes widen and my heart drop in my chest. He doesn't know. He truly doesn't know what parts of his mind are his own and what parts were made by her. Maven. I can't help but whisper, terrified by what I may have stumbled upon. He draws one hand through dark hair, pulling at the strands until they stand on end. An odd silence stretches, one that exposes us both. I feel as though I have wandered somewhere I should not be, trespassed into a place I really don't want to go. Leave, he finally says, the word quivering. I don't move, drinking in what I can. For use later, I tell myself. Not because I'm too numb to walk away. Not because I feel one more incredible surge of pity for the Ghost Prince. I said, leave. I'm used to Cal's anger heating up a room. Maven's anger freezes, and a chill runs down my spine. The longer you make them wait, the worse they'll be. Evangeline Samos has the best and worst timing. She blazes through in her usual storm of metal and mirrors, her long cape trailing. It picks up the red color of the room, glinting crimson and scarlet, flashing with every step. As I watch her, heart hammering in my chest, the cape splits and reforms before my eyes, each half wrapping around a muscled leg. She smirks, letting me watch, as her court dress becomes an imposing suit of armor. It, too, is lethally beautiful, worthy of any queen. As before, I am not her problem, and she turns her attention from me. She doesn't miss the strange current of tension on the air, or Maven's harried manner. Her eyes narrow. Like me, she takes in the sight. Like me, she will use this to her advantage. Maven, did you hear me? She takes a few bold steps, rounding the desk to stand alongside him. Maven angles his body, ghosting swiftly from one of her hands. The governors are waiting, and my father himself. With a vicious will, Maven grabs a sheet of paper from his desk. Judging by the florid signatures at the bottom, it must be some kind of petition. He glares at Evangeline, holding the paper away from his body as he flicks his wrist, drawing sparks from his bracelet. They light into twin arcs of flame, dancing through the petition like hot knives through butter. It disintegrates into ash, dusting the gleaming floor. Tell your father and his puppets what I think of his proposition. If she's surprised by his actions, she does not show it. Instead, she sniffs, inspects her nails. I watch her sidelong, well aware that she'll attack me if I so much as breathe too loudly. I keep quiet and wide-eyed, wishing I'd noticed the petition before, wishing I knew what it said. Careful, my dear, Evangeline says, sounding anything but loving. A king without supporters is no king at all. He turns on her, moving quickly enough to catch her off guard. They're close to the same height, and they stand almost eye to eye. Fire and iron. I don't expect her to flinch, not for Maven, the boy, the prince she used to run laps around in our training sessions. Maven is not Cal. but her eyelids flicker, black lashes against silver-white skin, betraying a sliver of fear she wants to hide. Don't assume you know what kind of king I am, Evangeline. I hear his mother in him, and it frightens us both. Then he turns his eyes back on me. The confused boy of a moment ago is gone again, replaced by living stone and a frozen glare. The same goes for you, his expression says. Even though I want nothing more than to run from the room, I stand rooted. He has taken everything from me, but I won't give him my fear or my dignity. I won't run away now, especially not in front of Evangeline. She looks at me again, eyes flitting over every inch of my appearance, memorizing what I look like. She must see me beneath the healer's touch, the bruises earned in my escape attempt, the permanent shadows beneath my eyes. When she focuses on my collarbone, it takes me a moment to understand why. Her lips part, just a little, in what can only be surprise. Angry, ashamed, I pull the collar of my dress back up over my brand, but I will never look away from her as I do. She will not take my pride either. Guards, Maven finally says, pitching his voice at the door. As the Arvins answer, gloves outstretched to hurry me away, Maven points his chin at Evangeline. You too. She doesn't take well to that, of course. I am not some prisoner to be ordered around. I smile as the Arvins pull me away and out the door. It eases shut, but Evangeline's voice echoes behind us. Good luck, I think. Maven cares even less about you than he does about me. My guards set a quick pace, forcing me to keep up. More easily said than done, in the restricting dress, but I manage. The scrap of Geese's silk feels soft against my skin, clenched tightly in a fist. I fight the urge to smell the fabric, to chase any remnant of my sister. I steal a glance back, hoping to glimpse exactly who might be waiting for an audience with our wicked king. Instead, I see only sentinels, black-masked and flame-robed, standing guard at the study door. It wrenches open violently, quivering on jumping hinges before slamming closed with a smack. For a girl raised a noble, Evangeline has a difficult time controlling her temper. I wonder if my old etiquette instructor, Lady Blanos, ever tried to teach her otherwise. The image almost makes me laugh, bringing a rare smile to my lips. It stings, but I don't care. Save your smirks, lightning girl, Evangeline snarls, doubling her speed. Her reaction only goads me on, despite the danger. I laugh outright as I turn back around. Neither of my guards says a word, but they quicken their pace a little. Even they don't want to test an irritable magnetron itching for a scuffle. She catches us anyway, smoothly sidestepping Egg to plant herself in front of me. The guards stop short, holding me with them. In case you haven't noticed, I'm a bit busy, I tell her, gesturing to the guards holding both my arms. There isn't really room for bickering in my schedule. Go bother someone who can fight back. Her smile flashes, sharp and bright as the scales of her armor. Don't sell yourself short. You've got plenty of fight left in you. Then she leans forward, stepping into my space as she did with Maven, an easy way to show she is unafraid. I stand firm, willing myself not to wince, even when she plucks a razored scale from her armor like a petal from a flower. At least I hope so, she says under her breath. With a careful flick of her hand, she cuts the collar of my dress, stripping back a piece of embroidered scarlet. I fight the urge to cover the M brand on my skin, feeling a hot flush of embarrassment creep up my throat. Her eyes linger, tracing the rough lines of Maven's mark. Again, she seems surprised. That doesn't look like an accident. Any other wonderful observations you'd like to share? I mutter through gritted teeth. Grinning, she replaces the scale on her bodice. Not with you. It is a reprieve when she pulls back, putting a few precious inches between us. Elaine? Yes, Eve? A voice says, from nowhere. I nearly jump out of my skin when Elaine Haven materializes behind her, seemingly from thin air. A shadow able to manipulate light, powerful enough to make herself invisible. I wonder how long she's been standing with us. or if she was in the study, either with Evangeline or before she even walked in. She could have been watching the entire time. For all I know, Elaine could have been my ghost since the moment I got here. "Has anyone ever tried to put a bell on you?" I snap, if only to hide my own discomfort. Elaine offers a pretty, tight-lipped smile that does not reach her eyes. "Once or twice." Like Sonia, Elaine is familiar to me. We spent many days in training together, always at odds. She is another of Evangeline's friends, girls smart enough to ally themselves to a future queen. As a lady of House Haven, her gown and jewelry are deepest black, not in mourning, but in deference to her house colors. Her hair is as red as I remember, bright copper, in contrast to dark, angled eyes, and skin that seems blurred, perfected, and flawless. The light around her is carefully manipulated, giving her a heavenly glow. "We're finished here," Evangeline says, turning her laser focus on Elaine. "For now." She throws back one daggered glance to make her point clear. 9. Mare. Being a doll is an odd thing. I spend more time on the shelf than at play, but when I'm forced to, I dance at Maven's command. He upholds his bargain while I do. After all, he's a man of his word. The first new blood seeks refuge at Ocean Hill, the Harbor Bay Palace, and as Maven promised, he is given full protection from the so-called terror of the Scarlet Guard. A few days later, the poor man, Moriton, is escorted to Archeon and introduced to Maven himself. It is well broadcast. Both his identity and his ability are now commonly known in court. To the surprise of many, Moriton is a burner, like the scions of House Kalor. But unlike Cal and Maven, he has no need for a flamemaker bracelet, or even a spark. His fire comes from ability, and ability alone, same as my lightning. I have to sit and watch, perched on a gilded chair with the rest of Maven's royal entourage. John, the seer, sits with me, red-eyed and quiet. As the first two new bloods to join with the Silver King, we are afforded places of great honor at Maven's side, second to Evangeline and Samson Mirandus. But only Moriton pays us any attention. As he approaches, before the eyes of court and a dozen cameras, his gaze is always on me. He trembles, afraid, but something about my presence keeps him from running away, keeps him walking forward. Obviously, he believes what Maven made me say. He believes the Scarlet Guard hunted us all. He even kneels and swears to join Maven's army, to train with silver officers, to fight for his king and his country. Keeping silent and still is the most difficult part. Despite Moriton's lanky limbs, golden skin, and hands calloused by years of servant work, he looks like nothing more than a little rabbit scurrying directly into a trap. One wrong word from me, and the trap will spring. More follow. Day after day, week after week, sometimes one, sometimes a dozen. From every corner of the nation they come, fleeing to the supposed safety of their king. Most because they are afraid, but some because they are foolish enough to want a place here. To leave their lives of oppression behind and become the impossible. I can't blame them. After all, we've been told our entire lives that the Silvers are our masters, our betters, our gods. And now they are merciful enough to let us live in their heaven. Who wouldn't try to join them? Maven plays his part well. He embraces them all as brothers and sisters, smiling broadly, showing no shame or fear in an act that most Silvers find repulsive. The court follows his lead, but I can see their sneers and scowls hidden behind jeweled hands. Even though this is part of the charade, a well-aimed blow against the Scarlet Guard, they dislike it. What's more, they fear it. Many of the new bloods have untrained abilities more powerful than their own, or beyond silver comprehension. They watch with wolf eyes and ready claws. For once, I am not the center of attention. It is my only respite, not to mention an advantage. No one cares about the Lightning Girl without her lightning. I do what I can, which is little, but not inconsequential. I listen. Evangeline is restless despite an iron-faced facade. Her fingers drum the arms of her seat, still only when Elaine is near, whispering or touching her. But then she does not dare to relax. She remains on an edge as sharp as her knives. It's not hard to guess why. Even for a prisoner, I've heard very little talk of a royal wedding. And though she is certainly betrothed to the king, she is still not a queen. It scares her. I see it in her face, in her manner, in her constant parade of glittering outfits, each one more complicated and regal than the last. She wears a crown in all but name, yet the name is what she wants more than anything. Her father wants it too. Volo haunts her side, resplendent in black velvet and silver brocade. Unlike his daughter, he doesn't wear any metal that I can see. Not a chain or even a ring. He doesn't need to wear weaponry to seem dangerous. With his quiet manner and dark robes, he looks more like an executioner than a noble. I don't know how Maven can stand his presence, or the steady, focused hunger in his eyes. He reminds me of Ilara, always watching the throne, always waiting for a chance to take it. Maven notices and does not care. He gives Volo the respect he requires, but little more. And he leaves Evangeline to Elaine's dazzling company, obviously glad that his future wife has no interest in him. His focus is decidedly elsewhere. Not on me, strangely, but on his cousin Samson. I also have a hard time ignoring the whisper who tortured the deepest parts of me. I am constantly aware of his presence, trying to feel out his whispers if I can, though I hardly have the strength to resist them. Maven doesn't have to worry about that, not with his chair of silent stone. It keeps him safe. It keeps him empty. When I was first trained to be a princess, a laughable thing in itself, I was engaged to the second prince, and I attended very few meetings of court. Balls, yes. Feasts, many, but nothing like this until my confinement. Now I've almost lost count of how many times I've been forced to sit like Maven's well-trained pet, listening to petitioners, politicians, and new bloods pledging allegiance. Today looks to be more of the same. The governor of the Rift region, a house of Lord Laris, finishes a well-rehearsed plea for treasury funds to repair Samos-owned mines, another one of Volo's puppets, his strings clearly visible. Maven defers him easily, with a wave and a promise to review his proposal. Though Maven is a man of his word with me, he is not at court. The governor's shoulders slump in dejection, knowing it will never be read. My back already hurts from the stiff chair, not to mention the rigid posture I have to maintain in my latest court ensemble. Crystal and lace. Red, of course. As always. Maven loves me in red. He says it makes me look alive, even as life is leached from me with every passing day. A full court is not required for the daily hearings, and today the throne room is half empty. The dais is still crowded, though. Those chosen to accompany the king, flanking his left and right, take great pride in their position, not to mention the opportunity to be featured in yet another national broadcast. When the cameras roll, I realize that more new bloods must be coming. I sigh, resigning myself to another day of guilt and shame. My gut twists when the tall doors open. I lower my eyes, not wanting to remember their faces. Most will follow Moriton's damning example and join Maven's war in an attempt to understand their abilities. Next to me, John twitches in his usual way. I focus on his fingers, long and thin, drawing lines against his pant leg, sweeping back and forth, like a person riffling through pages of a book. He probably is, reading the tentative threads of the future as they form and change. I wonder what he sees. Not that I would ever ask. I will never forgive him for his betrayal. At least he doesn't try to talk to me, not since I passed him in the council chambers. "Welcome all," Maven tells the new bloods. His voice is practiced and steady, carrying through the throne room. "Not to worry. You're safe now. I promise you all, the Scarlet Guard will never threaten you here." Too bad. I keep my head bowed, hiding my face from the cameras. The rush of blood roars in my ears, hammering in time with my heart. I feel nauseous. I feel sick. "Run!" I scream in my head, even though no new blood could escape the throne room now. I look anywhere but at Maven and the New Bloods. Anywhere but at the invisible cage drawing in around them. My eyes land on Evangeline, only to find her staring back at me. She isn't smirking for once. Her face is blank, empty. She has much more practice at this than I do. My nails are ragged, cuticles picked raw during long nights of worry and longer days of this painless torture. The Skonos healer, who makes me look healthy, always forgets to check my hands. I hope anyone watching the broadcasts does not. Next to me, the king keeps at this horrid display. Well? Four new bloods present themselves, each one more nervous than the last. Their abilities are often met with astonished gasps or harried whispers. It feels like a grim mirror to Queen's Trial. Instead of performing their abilities for a bridal crown, the new bloods are performing for their lives, to earn what they think is sanctuary at Maven's side. I try not to watch, but find my eyes straying out of pity and fear. The first, a heavyset woman with biceps to rival Cal's, tentatively walks through a wall. Just straight through, as if the gilded wood and ornate molding were air. At Maven's fascinated encouragement, she then does the same to a sentinel guard. He flinches, the only indication of humanity behind his black mask, but is otherwise unharmed. I have no idea how her ability works at all, and I think of Julian. He's with the Scarlet Guard, too, and hopefully watching every one of these broadcasts. If the Colonel allows it, that is. He's not exactly a fan of my silver friends. Two old men follow the woman, white-haired veterans with faraway eyes and broad shoulders. Their abilities are familiar to me. The shorter one with missing teeth is like Ketha, one of the new bloods I recruited months ago. Though she could explode an object or person with thought alone, she did not survive our raid on Koros Prison. She hated her ability. It is bloody and violent. Even though the new blood man only destroys a chair, blinking it to splinters, he doesn't look happy about it either. His friend is soft-spoken, introducing himself as Terence before telling us he can manipulate sound, like Farah, another recruit of mine. She did not come to Koros. I hope she is still alive. The last is another woman, probably my mother's age, her braided black hair streaked with gray. She is graceful in movement, approaching the king with the quiet, elegant strides of a well-trained servant. Like Ada, like Walsh, like me once, like so many of us were and still are. When she bows low. Your Majesty, she murmurs, her voice soft and unassuming as a summer breeze. I am Hallie, a servant of House Egri. Maven gestures for her to rise, donning his false smile. She does as commanded. You were a servant of House Egri, he says gently. Then he nods over her shoulder, finding the commanding head of Egri in the small crowd. My thanks, Lady Melina, for bringing her to safety. The tall, bird-faced woman is already curtsying, knowing the words before he speaks them. As an eye, she can see the immediate future, and I assume she saw her servant's ability before her servant even realized what she was. Well, Hallie? Her eyes flick to mine for a single moment. I hope I hold up under her scrutiny. But she isn't looking for my fear or what I hide beneath my mask. Her eyes turn far away, seeing through and seeing nothing at the same time. She can control and create electricity, great and small, Hallie says. You have no name for this ability. Then she looks at John. The same look slides over her. He sees fate, as far as its path goes, for as long as a person walks it. You have no name for this ability. Maven narrows his eyes, wondering, and I loathe myself for feeling the same way he does. But she keeps going, staring and speaking as she turns. She can control metal materials through the manipulation of magnetic fields. Magnetron. Whisper. Shadow. Magnetron. Magnetron. Down she goes through the line of Maven's advisors, pointing and naming their abilities with little difficulty. Maven leans forward, quizzical, head tipped to one side in animal curiosity. He watches closely, barely blinking. Many think him stupid without his mother, not a military genius like his brother. So, what is he good for?